Melissa, who is going to be our second speaker of the night. Melissa is actually a grad student from here at the University of Guelph, and she did her master's in the Latin American and Caribbean program. Mm-hmm. So she's from New Hampshire, and before coming to Guelph, she spent 7 years in Mexico. And so kind of what she focuses on, from what I've gathered, is that she kind of looks at the issue of transnational families and how families deal, or parents kind of deal, with being a parent and also being abroad, and kind of the gender roles that come into play and the ideologies that come into play. So if everyone could give a round of applause for Melissa.
Well, thank you so much, and I am really honored to be here and so humbled to have been asked to be here, because I'm just a student. But I'm really so impressed that you're all here and you care about this issue that we care about so much. So thank you for being here. And as Mina said, I just graduated from the University of Guelph for the Master's in Latin American and Caribbean Studies. And while I was a student, I got the incredible opportunity to speak, to work with Dr. Carrie Priebisch, who's a huge advocate for migrant workers. So I don't know if any of you have known her, but she works in the sociology and anthropology department. And I was a research assistant for her on a project looking at the experiences of migrant workers in the SOP, like Juan and others. Another program that brings migrant workers to work in Canada called the NOC-CND Pilot Program. So there's these different programs that are bringing people from Latin America is my focus, because I lived in Mexico for so many years, but there's other people coming from all over the world, coming to work in Canada for contracts of 2 months, up to 8 months, to even 2 years. So I'm really interested in the experiences of transnational families, as Mina talked about, because when people come here, and this I'm going to talk about in further detail, they can't bring their families. So this is, you know, dividing families all the time. So this is my area of interest, and this is what this presentation is going to be about. And this is actually based on my research and my thesis defense. So I tried to make it less academic, but if you have any questions, please feel free to interrupt. The thesis was called "The Parental Controls, the Gendered Experiences of Latin American Mothers and Fathers in Canada's Agricultural Guest Worker Programs." So immigration is one of the most important and most highly debated modern-day social issues worldwide, as growing inequalities between the richest and poorest nations create an ever-increasing imbalance of power, wealth, and resources. As rich countries get richer, they require a labor force if they are to continue to grow and develop. Meanwhile, livelihood opportunities in poorer countries are diminishing, forcing people to look for work outside of their communities of origin. Furthermore, in this era of seemingly unending crises of national security, rich countries are increasingly tightening their borders, making documented permanent immigration so difficult and so expensive that it is virtually impossible for the poor who would like to immigrate to do so. It is under these circumstances that we've seen a growth in temporary migration programs, which essentially allow people to come and work temporarily, but not to stay permanently. These migrants often live very uncertain and precarious lives. They make just enough to provide for their families and perhaps improve their housing situation or pay for their children's education, but rarely enough to be able to stop migrating. This ensures that migrants continue to return temporarily, year after year, to satisfy the rich nation's ever-growing demand for human labor. Most temporary migration programs prohibit workers from bringing their families with them when they migrate, which means families are divided for extended periods of time. And even when the programs officially allow migrants to bring their families, because there are a few that allow them to eventually bring their families with them, it would be financially impossible for most migrants to support their families in Canada on the low wages they earn here, thus prohibiting them from doing so, because most of the time they earn minimum wage, and so having their families here, it would be just impossible. So in terms of gender, there's been a surge in the migration of women worldwide that some have referred to as the feminization of migration. However, the increased demand in female laborers is clearly most prevalent in areas such as domestic and care work, sex work, and prostitution. In Canada, the bulk of caregiving migrants are female, while men still make up the overwhelming majority in the highly masculinized agricultural sector. In fact, women have only been eligible for participation in the SOP since 1989, even though it started in 1966. And it is estimated that women make up a mere 2 or 3% of the total workforce in the program. So as I mentioned earlier, my research was part of a larger study called Homemaking Across Borders. And my research methods included ethnographic research in the form of participant observation and convivencia, which is a Spanish word that literally means coexistence. But I think it's better described as hanging out or just spending time together. So I did a lot of that, eating food, making food, just watching movies together, things like that. And I interviewed 25 of the Mexican and Guatemalan migrants that I met, and I conducted 2 interviews also in English with Canadian citizens that are connected to the migrant community. And these interviews took place in farming communities across Ontario and Alberta. So when talking to migrant parents, one thing is very clear. Their primary motivation to migrate is their children. They hope to be able to better provide for their families with their earnings in Canada. Migrants emphasize that they want their children to be able to go to school and have a career so that they will never have to migrate as their parents did. While both men and women migrate for their children, there's a clear distinction between men's and women's reasons for migration. While almost all participants experience some degree of poverty prior to migration, women typically face some sort of an extraordinary social crisis, usually related to a failed male breadwinner, in addition to the poverty. Migrant mothers often told me that migration didn't feel like a choice, but something that they had to do precisely because they were single mothers who did not have the financial and emotional support of a partner. Men, on the other hand, often faced poverty before they migrated, but generally had not experienced a social crisis like the women had. Almost all of them were married and they had children and had relatively stable social lives other than the poverty that they had experienced before they migrated. Also key to my research, and something that very clearly demonstrates the area of gender divide, is in migrants' descriptions of managing caregiving arrangements for their children. Children of migrant fathers typically stay at home with their mothers when they migrate. While men miss their children, they're not worried about the quality of care that their child is receiving. On the other hand, of all the 17 mothers that I, the migrant mothers that I interviewed, only one of them had left their children with the children's father. In all of the other cases, the father was either not willing or not able to care for the children. So this means that the migrants have to leave their children with someone, and usually it's their own mothers, the maternal grandmother, but sometimes it's someone like the eldest daughter or some other female kin. And frequently, the caregiving relationship has been established before the opportunity to come to Canada came about. And so sometimes it's relatively easy to figure out, who am I going to leave my kids with? But in other cases, mothers reported feeling like their children were really like a burden to the caregiver. And they told me that they really worry about the care, the quality of care that their children receive while they're away, especially in cases when the caregiver is older. Sometimes the grandmothers are older and don't have the energy required to care for small and active children. Resource exchanges, communication, and sacrifice were the 3 main themes that emerged when I talked to migrants about their experiences parenting transnationally. Both male and female migrants that I interviewed reported remitting or sending home about 60 to 80% of their Canadian earnings home to Latin America. And the principal use of this money is to care for their children. For the most part, communication between migrant parents and their children is limited to phone conversations. Some of the migrant accommodations here in Canada have shared landlines. Some of them don't. Sometimes they have to use public payphones, even when they live in very rural, remote areas and they have to come into town once a week or sometimes less. Sometimes they can get cell phones, but in some of these rural areas, the cell phone reception is really spotty. So, I mean, in an age when we feel like we can communicate all the time, it can be really upsetting not to be able to talk to your children when you want to. So some people can buy cell phones, sometimes they don't work. Even when they have a cell phone, even when there is a landline to call internationally, they have to buy phone cards. so it's very expensive, and I don't know if anybody's ever used an international phone card, but there's sometimes spotty service and you get cut off right in the middle of like a really emotional conversation or something. It can be really, really frustrating. And then also, apart from the technological limitations, such, you know, about with phone cards and things like that, you know, migrants work really, really long days, and as Juan mentioned, you know, unpredictable hours. So, you know, even if they can call home, sometimes the children are sleeping or at school. So it makes it really difficult to find times to connect. Another thing that migrants really talked about is how sacrifice is something that it really means to be, what it means to be a transnational parent. The sacrifices that parents make for their children as participants in these programs put their health, their safety, their emotional well-being, and basic human rights at risk. My research furthers the work that my advisor Carrie and others have completed, which demonstrates how these programs allow for labor and human rights abuses. For example, inspection and enforcement of health and labor conditions, like we talked about with Philip, is virtually non-existent. Furthermore, migrants' tenure in these programs is extremely precarious because of policy that allows employers to dismiss and repatriate workers without just cause. Migrants, especially women, are subject to dehumanizing treatment, and their personal mobility is often limited by farm rules like we just heard about. Employers are required to provide housing for workers, and while the conditions at some of these residences are okay, most are substandard in quality and overcrowded. We're talking 4, 5, 8 people in one bedroom in bunk beds for months and months at a time. There is almost no enforcement of housing quality and safety standards. Many of the people I spoke with described the challenges of sharing space under such circumstances. For women especially, these living conditions, in addition to the challenges they face as the minority, lead to conflict between them. And women described to me the conflict as being totally heartbreaking and as taking up a lot of their free time and energy that would otherwise be dedicated to their children. So then, how are the experiences of transnational parents gendered? My research demonstrates that migration allows mothers to take on the role of breadwinner, one that, according to traditional Latin American parenting ideologies, is assigned principally to men. Women who had migrated to Canada for multiple seasons demonstrated pride in having been able to salir adelante, or provide a better life for herself and her children. However, these mothers also described the painful estrangement that develops between themselves and their children, as well as feelings of regret, a sense of loss, guilt, self-doubt, and questioning of their decision to migrate. Women often told me that they felt like they had abandoned their children when clearly they did not. They worry about what their lives will be like once they are too old to be useful as temporary migrant workers and have to return to Mexico or Guatemala permanently. Maria, a 32-year-old Mexican mother of a teenager who was in Canada for the first time when I met her, summed up how she questions her decision to migrate in this passage. I'm telling you that I don't know if the 50 or 80,000 pesos that I will earn here are really worth 8 months of lost time with my child. If you look at it that way, the money really isn't anything. If you said to me, I'm going to take your child away from you for 8 months, and in exchange I will give you 80,000 pesos, which is less than $8,000, probably. Depends on the exchange rate, maybe six, something like that. I would say, no, I will give you the money. Give me another 8 months with my son. Women like Maria, who are relatively new to temporary migration, were often very emotional and almost angry about the separation from their children. Maria later told me how unjust she thinks it is that she was forced to choose between her child and her livelihood. On the other hand, older women who had been in the program for many years also questioned their decision to migrate. But for them, their separation from their children was a deep, profound sense of loss and regret, almost as if they were in mourning. Dulce, a long-term migrant who now has 2 adult children, explained how her migration has forever impacted her relationship with her children. When I talk with my children, I have always told them that I admire all of the women that come here because you leave part of your life in Mexico, your children, your life, your roots, to come to a country that is so far away. And today I am happy because as a woman, I feel accomplished. But as a mother, I have failed. How I would have liked to be with my children, to get up every morning, to make them a coffee and send them off to school, or to wait for them at night, tuck them in and tell them I love them. I have lost all these things and it hurts me so much. I feel empty because I don't know my children and they do not know me. I have spent 8 months of the year for 10 years here. Yes, I can go home to my home and sit down and say, I worked hard and all of this is mine. But my heart is empty because I have not felt my children's touch or heard them say, Mom, I love you. And they are right, because maybe when they needed me the most, I was not there with them. And now I am here, and maybe I will keep working until I am old, because at this point, I can't ask anything of my children when I wasn't even around to give them a hug. On the other hand, transnational fathers, while clearly saddened by their separation from their children and wives, do not question whether their migration was in the best interest of their children. Men reported that their migration challenges traditional gender roles, in that while in Canada they have to do women's work because their wives are not here for them to do it, as demonstrated in this quote by Ernesto. Here you have to make breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You have to do everything. You know, I am doing both things. I am being both woman and man. In Guatemala, my wife makes me food, and I just go to work. When I arrive in the afternoon, the food is ready. Thank God, that is what it's like there. My wife is with my children. She washes my clothing and everything. Despite this hardship, men proudly told me that they are able to better fulfill their roles as fathers and breadwinners by coming to Canada. In fact, in a way, they even exceeded their expectations of their families and their communities because they were sending them dollars. When I asked Don Guido how he fulfills his responsibilities as a father from Canada, he replied, work, 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 and send money to my wife. This is logical. This is what a man and a Mexican gentleman should do. So what are the implications of what I'm talking about? I think that it demonstrates the irony of migration as a livelihood or parenting strategy, because almost all of the temporary migrant workers come to Canada motivated by the fact that the money that they send home will make them a better parent. And while migrants do send money home and call when they can, they face an enormous set of challenges while in Canada that really hinder their ability to parent transnationally. These challenges include not only technical difficulties like not having access to a phone line, but also exhausting, high pressure, and sometimes even abusive conditions at their places of employment and at the residences that they share with other migrant workers. These conditions are distracting, time-consuming, and leave migrants with very little energy or emotional resources to share with their children. This doesn't have quite the same impact on fathers because traditional gender roles in Latin America don't expect men to be such an emotional support because they are satisfactorily fulfilling the role that is expected of them by providing for their families financially when they're able to send money home. But transnational mothers, on the other hand, also provide for their children with the money that they earn here. However, the fact that they aren't able to provide the emotional, nurturing, in-person care that traditional gender roles expect of them creates a host of painful relational issues. These expectations make mothers feel guilty about their choices and as if they have failed their children. They often doubt whether they have really been a good mother by coming to Canada to work. So the irony then is that parents come here with the goal of becoming a better parent, and yet their ability to parent transnationally within the constructs of the program as it is really very limited. So in conclusion, I just want to suggest that countries like Canada that have temporary migration programs should offer a reasonable and accessible path to permanent residency, which is also known as landed immigrant status, and citizenship to all temporary migrant workers if they so desire. If a country needs the labor power of migrants from outside the borders, then these migrants should be given the option, if they so choose, to migrate permanently with their families to stay and work. I strongly believe that immigration policy should never divide families and that we should work together to make this happen and to see this through. And so as the United Food and Commercial Workers slogan, which is the UFCW, which is the union that supports the migrant community, although they don't have the right to unionize in most provinces, but they're still working with them. good enough to work, good enough to stay. Thank you.
Before we get started with our last speaker, who Mary Carl is going to introduce, I'm just going to touch on the family reunification and how that works. So I just wanted to show how systemic it is, kind of the repression of certain forms of migrant workers. So when people think of migrant workers, they often tend to think of low-skilled workers, so people who are working in the seasonal agriculture workers program, who are working on farms and greenhouses and canneries. But migrants are actually low-skilled and high-skilled, so people who are coming as doctors, as lawyers, as all kinds of different skills. So there's high-skilled and low-skilled. And what we have to understand is that the reunification process for families is very different from low-skilled to high-skilled. High-skilled, it's a lot easier for them to bring their families. They have that option. And sometimes in certain professions, it's actually encouraged because they want those people to stay. Whereas for low-skilled, as Melissa was touching on, you have to be able, in some cases, it's not, people aren't even shown that that's an option, that you can bring your families. Actually, how it works when they're coming to bring in people into the seasonal agricultural workers program, they'll actually select men who have families. So they know that they'll go back. They don't want to have men who are going to be staying. And so it kind of just shows how systemic it is that while high-skilled workers are kind of encouraged and have this option to bring their families, it's a lot more difficult for low-skilled workers to bring their families. They're not going to have the money. They have to have the money to provide for them while they're there, so they're not going to have the money. And in some cases, it's not even made an option.